G'day guys and welcome to another episode of the Scouting Australia podcast powered by Australian Property Scout Buyers Agency. I'm your host, Sammy Gordon, and today guys, we have back in the studio from down south, Mr. Mordor himself, Jimmy Ibrahim. Mate, welcome back.
G'day Sammy and g'day listeners. Good to be back as always up here in the GC. I like what you've done with the place.
Thank you, mate. Thank you.
You are a bit of a tradie by heart, aren't
you? Is that right?
You did a few renos with your mate, Matty.
Mate, I did plenty of renos, man. Plenty of renos, plenty of time on the tools. But today, we're talking about something different. Mate, I'm actually a little excited to talk about today. I'm undoubtedly going to get a little bit fired up as we chat about this one. It's something that, like, it gets the old tingles going, you know what I mean? It gets the old the red eye, getting crazy, ready to go. And guys, what we're going to be talking about, the title of the app is Why Buying Cheap Shit Units Will Never Retire You.
Ooh, that's a bit of a catchy title.
Oh, thank you, mate. Thank you.
I thought it'd be Tell us what you really mean.
I wanted to be direct. I wanted people to know what we're talking about.
You.
But pretty much, mate, look, I've been seeing it pop up now for a little bit. I've been wanting to kind of talk about it. I keep trying to block this stuff out, but I keep seeing the ads. They keep popping up. And it literally talking about this stuff, mate, you know where what happened with me back in the day getting burnt and kind of down this avenue is this sort of spruker sort of bullshit that I like to call it. You know, I don't actually see these buyer's agents that flick this sort of stuff and sell this sort of stuff as buyer's agents. I believe they're spruikers. They're full of shit and pretty much. And the thing that I really hate is I see some clients that have come through that have bought this sort of product from them before, and we look at it, we look over this thing and they go, "Oh no, mate, I shouldn't have bought this thing. I didn't realize till after. I got sold the dream, you know, all the rest of it." And then they don't realize until after. So what I'm trying to do is bring some awareness to the people out there about what these things are. Make sure you're keeping your eyes out for them. Don't get sold down the rainbow and lollipop, you know, journey that these things are amazing. They are shit, and we're going to break down today why that is.
Okay, so the Burley has been released in the water straight off the bat, and I haven't had to do anything, which is even better. When I got this title from you, I was thinking, okay, how is he going to run with this? Because I wasn't, and then I thought, from my side, I've just written down a bunch of questions as what the novice person may say. Because to me, this topic, I don't know a huge amount of the performance of units and so forth, and clearly I don't get as riled up as you about certain things. However, I do love you getting riled up, so I will do my best to prod and probe where I can for our listeners. So did you want to start, Sammy
mate,
boy?
Let me run, because what I want to do, the only thing is if I run with my thing, it's going to be 5 or 10 minutes, and that's probably going to be the max. And I know you like
I'll
to stretch these
I'll go for a drink and
out.
Come back.
All right, mate, you go. We'll do the good stuff, and then you come back with the bullshit later, all right? Okay. Go on, mate.
No, you go.
Toddle along.
Go on. Okay, go on.
So look, the main things, the reasons why I hate these as investments, right, is there's a few different factors and a few different sort of deal types I'm going to talk about. I'm specifically talking about things that are like sub 200 grand. I mean, these days, even stretching up towards 300 grand, like you're not getting that much for that sort of product. You're probably out in the boonies and you're probably not buying, you know, in a great location. You're buying a great product in a great location. The main reason I wanted to do this is there's some product being sold out there at the moment in the high, literally sub $100,000 in the high, whatever you call that, tens of thousands. Call it close to 100 grand up to around about 200 grand that I've been seeing a fair bit of that stuff coming across my table of clients that are now coming on board and they have these in their portfolio. Now, they're being sold down the garden path of, oh, well, these things have got 10% yields and you know, lower maintenance or whatever, super cheap entry price and all the rest of it, which the super cheap entry price is true. But the issue is the bang for buck is not there. And, man, people start talking about, oh, well, it's got a 10% yield and all the rest of it. It's like, great, 100 grand unit's got a 10% yield. That's $200 a week, right? Which is over the course of a year, 10 grand gross. And I think like the biggest thing that grinds me on these things, there's a few things. One of the biggest things is the idea of net cash flow on an asset like this is non-existent. If you run that example, yes, it's a 10% yield, which seems amazing on paper, but a 10% yield on something worth that, let's say it's 200 bucks a week, that's 10 grand a year. Mm-hmm. The council rates in a lot of these areas, we're talking regional areas, the council rates are $2,500-$3,000 a year for this dollar product, $2,000 to $3,000 a year. So mm-hmm. your 10 grand is now down to $7,000-$7,500. Mm-hmm. By the time you've paid your insurance, you've got your management cost, you've got everything in there from that side as well, they're always racking up. And even if those things rack up and that's another $2,000, all of a sudden you're down to $5,000 net. This is before you've even paid any interest. But then the other big thing on top, the juicy thing that obviously pulls everything undone, is the strata. Again, on top. Now, if you've got strata that's $2,000-$4,000 a year, and a lot of time the older complexes might have a higher one because more things are breaking down on them. There might be a higher cost of repair and different things like that. Even if you're sitting at $2,000-$3,000 for any of those, you're literally left with $2,000 or $3,000, maybe $4,000 left as a net income before you've paid any mortgage. So by the time you pay mortgage on one of these things, and all right, let's say you get to the very back end and you pay the thing off, or you buy it in cash, or it's $3,000 or $4,000 for one property.
Mm.
You need 20 of them, more than 20 of them, to get to bloody 100,000 net passive. 20 paid off. Like it's ludicrous. And so like I think people are getting sold down the garden path that these things are great because of the yield, the low entry price. We can, you know, extract 10% equity, which is $20,000. Like, you know, like talking about these things and going down these avenues. But what they aren't realizing until after they buy them is a lot of the time this sort of price pointed product is in, a lot of time you're going to get it in a very regional location. You're going to get in the worst suburb in that regional location, which a lot of the time is filled with a very undesirable demographic.
Mm.
The thing's probably going to get trashed. You're going to struggle to get it tenanted. You're going to be going through constant releases, repairs, all this sort of thing, if you can ever even keep it tenanted. And what I found a lot of our guys have actually done before they've even come to us is they have ended up offloading it within a 12-month window because it's just been a pure nightmare if they can even offload it. And there's some of these guys, this is why I say I call these guys spruikers, not even bloody buyer's agents. I've seen some of these guys who I was told a story where they had chopped up these eight units, or these eight units had been chopped up and they sold it onto the clients. And they sent a photo. The photo slide was from this one renovated unit that was renovated like 10 years ago. And they sent them, or that photo slide, to all the property owners. And so then they bought the property. They had to do the building and pest with their inspector who swept, they were an unethical company, swept everything under the rug, settled on this deal. And then by the property managers went out there to try and lease it. And they're like, mate, this thing needs like 30, 40 grand's worth of work. It needs a new kitchen, new bathroom, carpets and stuff, needs a new repaint. It smells terrible, all these things. And so they've been sold down this path of like, this thing's ready to go. It's going to be 10% yield. And they settle on it. And they're like, yeah, you need 20, 30 grand to get this thing rentable, just rentable. And that's how much it's going to be worth. It's only worth $100,000. And
so are you just saying that someone sent a photo of one apartment across the eight
all
of them?
All of them, yeah.
So the investors thought they were buying the one that was renovated and they settled on the shit one that was a completely different one. Yes. I mean, that is... That is ridiculous. Poor.
I know.
I mean, I don't even know. That is disgusting.
No, you sit there speechless when these guys tell you these things. And I've had worse stories in that one as well. Like that's a normal case in these scenarios with these sort of guys that are out there doing it. So hence why I wanted to do a potty on this thing, to bring a bit of awareness. And I hope that if anyone's looking or thinking or they've, you know, about any of this sort of stuff, or they know anyone that is, they send this stuff on so they can bring awareness to it. Because it's this sort of stuff can be debilitating, and it can also turn you off being an investor. And that's the one thing, obviously, on this platform and what we try and share is empowering everyone to get out there and invest and make good money out of investing and set themselves up for a great future. You know, I've seen that many people go out there and buy this sort of product and really, really come unstuck with it, you know. And it's not only properties like that. It could be in a bigger regional city, you know. I've seen a few in Cairns, whatever, like lifestyle apartments are over 55s and they're $100,000, $200,000 and the yield looks great, but there's no capital growth because no one wants that sort of asset. You know what I mean? Like they're very, very subpar properties, you know. And so really, I just wanted to break down, give people some awareness around this thing as well. Most people wouldn't be tempted to go and buy this sort of stuff, but the people that I'm worried about with this thing are either oldies that are getting into this game and they're just trying to, well, if I rack up a few of these deals, they're all 10 grand passive each. If I go buy 10 of them, there's 100 grand because that's how the story is being sold. And that is not the truth. The other side of things are the young fellas coming in going, well, this is all I can buy.
Mm.
They're paying full freight BA fee. They're putting down the deposit. Then they need to go and renovate this thing and it's only worth what they paid for it up front. And they're already back behind the eight ball. So I saw it happen too many times, mate. I wanted to bring it up.
Okay.
Wanted to do a little episode on it, really just kind of breaking down that side of things as well. And this is the whole thing. They sell it this idea that you could accumulate, let's say 20 of them and then you sell off half, do you sell off 10 to pay the other 10 out and you're left with 100, 150 grand pass or whatever. It is not the case. Make sure you are super aware of all this stuff and take everything into account and don't go in with your eyes closed on these things and be very, very wary of anyone selling this product.
Okay. So I've got a few questions that are coming to my mind. Can I just jump in and hit you up? So I've heard what you've said. So we're talking about units, right? Mm. We're not saying all units are bad.
No.
No, we're talking about a specific category of units.
I'm personally not a fan of units.
Which we'll get to.
It always lag. They always lag. They got Stratas, they got Body Corporates, they got the rest of it. They're a lagging investment. But this product in particular, these cheap, extremely average units, or as the title says, these cheap shit units, they are not going to put you in a good position.
Okay. So leads me to my next question.
Go for it.
If a cheap unit is all you can afford, should you start there or should you hold out and wait and save more money?
If you were going to do it yourself and your saving was like a very, very hard thing to let's say you could go buy something for 200 grand somewhere near where you lived and you could go and renovate it and do it all, but you were sourcing it yourself and you could go eyes wide open on this thing and go, all right, I can find comparables at 220, 230, 250 or something, and I can buy something at 200, or you can buy it and it's a dog box at 150 and you can renovate it, put some sweat equity into it. That sort of thing could probably potentially make sense. What I'm bringing people's awareness to is some dodgy operators that are out there that are selling this cheap. Yeah, really bad. But even then, man, like if you're at 200 grand and you're going to buy in a unit, like if your savings ability is there to get yourself to 300 and buy a house in 3 months or something, I probably would go down that avenue. If it's going to take you another year, try and find your niche within there. Find something you can find run down. You can find comparables that show that it'll be worth more if you gave it a cosmetic facelift. That sort of stuff. I'm all right with that. Like and like that's how I started. Obviously, it was a little bit more with that, but that's how I started with a lot of my stuff as well. So it is possible to make good money on that and to build the foundations. I've seen other people do it as well. Just bring awareness.
It makes sense because if you think about that, even if we use 200, if you take out a BA fee and renos that you're not aware of, that's more than your deposit that you actually even use to get into the deal.
100%. Yeah.
So you're shooting yourself in the foot. Mm. So that was a really good point. You need to know that market intimately and see the price variance and what value you can add. Mm. And if that is in your capabilities, because not everyone can do that.
Yeah.
Right?
Okay. And that's the thing, man. Like if you think you've got the ability or there's a market near you, you think you might be able to tap into, maybe you're in a capital city and 3 hours away, there's a little, you know, regional town with 5,000-10,000 people. And that's why I'm not saying this is the strategy for everyone. But if you were a very low income earner, you had a very low deposit, it was going to take you another year to save up a deposit to buy a different house. You know, that example I gave before could be a good little opportunity to get your foot in the door to then level up to other deals.
So for someone listening out there and going, okay, I get it at that price point, but if there's the same scenario that's 300, 400, 500 grand that I could potentially do the same thing to, would that be something that they should consider or just think, nah, houses are always going to outperform the units, you're better off buying a house?
My honest opinion is once you go into that price bracket, there are enough markets around the country with housing markets that will outperform from that front that I would go into the housing market.
Okay.
You know, until the last 18 months when affordability became a serious issue in the country, the unit market in the past 12 to 18 months has moved off the bottom of where it was for 10, 15 years, right? And there are some markets out there that have outperformed others. But if you look at Brizzy, like when you and I entered Brizzy and we did quite well with what we bought in there and how much growth it had, the unit market didn't move. In those 2 years, the market went crazy. The unit market was almost still exactly the same when the housing market had almost doubled. The only reason that market finally started moving was interest rates went so high that rent started moving and the cheapest and most affordable option for everyone out there, even though they were undesirable, was the unit market. And so the unit market then had its little spurt. But again, it was the most affordable product. It's now done a level of catching up. I still don't think it's a great investment. And I do believe there's better investment opportunities out there.
If we were just to look at units overall compared to houses over the last decade or so forth, how would you say that they've performed in comparison?
Severely lagged. So you look at that example of what we said about Brizzy, and I look at the property. So during COVID, obviously, most people who have listened to this poddy have probably heard my stories, you know, my podcast episodes on my own journey. And when I sold the Wollongong unit, so I looked at the Wollongong unit at the back end of the Sydney boom in COVID. Yeah, so like it doubled in 2013 to 2017, and then in COVID it had another little spurt. But after I'd sold it in 2017, within 12 months, it had gone back down by 20%.
Right? Can you give us the numbers of that again, just for people to understand the time frame?
Yeah, so I bought the unit for 275 in 2009. I bought well and I renovated it. So I manufactured about $50,000-$60,000 worth of equity in the first couple of years, but then it didn't really do anything for about 5 years. And then in 24 years, it was 5 years because Wollongong and Southern Highlands and stuff, it lagged Sydney by about a year. So in 2014, it started its run. And then in 2017, I sold it pretty much at the peak of the market for $525,000. So I paid $275,000. I put $5,000 into it for renos, sold it for $525,000. Within 12 months of that, in mid-2018, it was back worth around about the mid to high 400,000. So it had come off by about 10 to 20%, right, in that time frame. But during COVID of 2020 to 2022, when a lot of the fringe areas, Wollongong included, had a big run, a lot of housing in Wollongong doubled again. And down in the Southern Highlands, all my houses down there, you know, they did about another 70, 80% growth in that time frame. I looked at the unit. The unit had only gone back up. Well, maybe it would have been worth 550, maybe 600,000. So it had gone back up and gone up a little bit. But the housing market had gone up by about 70 to 80%, in some areas more. And the unit market had maybe gone up 20, 25. So literally same market, same time, same market dynamics and everything. I honestly believe they always lag. From a growth perspective, they always lag. And from a cash flow perspective, they always lag. And from a manufacturing lever pulling ability on those properties as well, they almost always lag.
We're going to go into the metrics of why they lag, right? Is that what you're going to unpack? Do you feel like going into that just to give – because people say, okay, why?
They're just not as desirable a product. So like one of the biggest things in – and there's always an abundant supply. They aren't landlocked, right? So like housing, and in housing in expensive areas or nice areas, like we're up here on the Goldie now, right? Burleigh and Palm Beach. They're not making any more land, yeah? And like near the beach, they don't make any more land. They are taking land up to build apartment blocks here and there, which is just making the housing market even more expensive because it's so limited what is left there. And it's the same as Wollongong, for example. It's the same as, the Highlands, all these sorts of things. The units, they can take an acre and create 100 units. But they take an acre with houses, they might create 8 housing blocks or something like that. They're not going to create a huge amount of additional housing from a house and land.
Yes.
Houses on land sort of perspective. But on units, it can almost be like an unlimited sort of, not unlimited, but a very, very high amount that they can generate from that site as well. Yeah. So the supply is nowhere near as limited. And when the supply is nowhere near as limited or constrained, the price growth can't be as high. Mm. They're also never as desirable. So there's never as big a market that is going to go and chase and want to buy units as compared to houses.
Yeah. And also the infill, like you could have a brand new apartment, but all of a sudden 3 towers go up near you.
Exactly.
With a newer product. And if they can't sell that, they bring that price down. So what's going to happen to you? Why would someone pay a premium for yours when you've got all these new ones?
And that's the biggest issue. And when you're in those areas, they're always increasing density, almost always increasing density, looking for smaller blocks that they can then knock over and build the bigger blocks, or looking for the houses that's a huge, ridiculous land content value of land because they can build up on those things as well. There's nowhere near the same sort of scarcity that there is in that sort of product. Mm. Whereas when it comes to, especially, cities like Sydney and like we're up here on the Goldie, like you're landlocked by escarpment up here. Same with Wollongong was the same. Sydney's the same, landlocked by National Park, by the ocean and whatnot as well. You're landlocked by these things that it's not going to create a huge additional amount of supply of land.
Yeah.
Whereas with the apartments, it's exactly as you said, it's an infill product.
Yeah.
That they're going to be able to, they can keep producing that stuff.
The other thing I don't like about units, and I know we're talking about units in general, and I know our topic today is about the real cheap, there's a different angle. But I love it, the properties that we buy, and you always use the term stack the deck. So when you're buying something, how many different facets can you manipulate and control the asset?
How many levers can you pull?
When we're buying a house, we know exactly what's going to happen by buying in established suburbs, what we can do before we've even bought it. So before we've even spent our money, we already know what the outcome's going to be.
Yeah, 100%.
Whereas when you're buying a unit, you don't have any control. You can't change. You can't add another bedroom. You could do a little reno, but how much is that going to change? So the only thing you can rely on is the market conditions to change for you.
Yeah. You can do cosmetic renos. You can do things.
How much is that going to move the needle? One trick pony. That's the thing I love about the houses. You got so many different levers.
It's very true. Even from a cosmetic reno perspective on a house, you can cosmetically enhance an exterior for quite, especially if you buy something 100%. That's terrible and you go put some time and effort and some sweat equity into that as well. For a very minimal cost, you could completely, you could literally jump a place by 10% if it was ugly enough when you first bought it. So for maybe $5,000. So that's 100% one of the biggest and coolest things you can do with a lever pool like that. is with the housing market compared to the units. So
also, what about the cladding issues that are happening now? Everyone I speak to who's got a unit complex, they don't know what their strata is going to be because they don't know how exposed their cladding issues potentially are going to be.
Yeah.
And how many properties have been built with those cladding issues? So that's, I mean, if that's not a sign of why the risk associated with it.
Yeah.
And I know we've gone off on a bit about units, but I think it's important to understand in general that if, why would you be, like opportunity cost. We always talk about opportunity cost. The A or B, and each of them have an outcome.
Yeah.
So why would you do one if there is a better option out there?
Yeah, for sure. I think what gets me as well, like specifically for this title, you know, and going into that cheap brackets, if you're talking $100,000, $150,000, $200,000, you start, you know, talking about, especially like people who've got the equity and they've got the borrowing and they've got the capacity to go and buy different products and they're kind of getting pushed into this thing, or they're, you know, they think it's a great idea because they see the yield and like, oh yeah, the low entry price, you know, it's not hard to recycle equity, keep building it or whatever. But it just is, it is the incorrect option for going out there and building a portfolio, you know, unless it was the only avenue you had. And like I said before, you create that environment where you can still win out of it. But you're not being sold something like that because that literally is the last resort of nothing else. But even then, there's different levers, you know, the guarantors, you know, where else can we maybe get some money from to go for something a bit bigger? But yeah, man, these things, I've never seen them perform well. I've seen a lot of people get burned by them, have big issues, have big tenancy issues and everything as well. And they just create headaches, man. So, yeah, super, yeah, massive advocate against them.
And it never ceases to surprise me in the finance industry, whether it's property or shares or financial planners or so forth. And there are plenty of great people out there, but there are a lot of sharks out there that are looking for their own interests. I mean, I just can't understand why these people would be selling this, thinking this client is going to buy another property. Like, surely the numbers... They're gonna come home to roost.
They're focusing on volume.
So you think they're just getting it one deal, burn, and go to the next client?
Yeah, but the thing is, because of the price point, they're like, oh, mate, you should load up and buy a few of them. And if they buy a few of them at once, like, you know, they're getting paid, let's say, 2-3 full BA fees for a deal that's worth $100,000-$200,000. Okay. They can rack a few of those up pretty easy, pretty quick, and then they're moving on to the next victim.
Gotcha. Okay. The thing that jumps out at me, and for people who are even still thinking, okay, yeah, but it's cheap and I can get in, like... Think about the full, like, go through the end game of what these are going to actually do for you. And I don't think people really dig deep enough as to what is the end game. And I think you hit it really well. If it's not an equity play, so those markets are not going to really grow, right? And if they're not a cash flow play, then why are we holding them? So they're not achieving any of them, right?
What is it in the portfolio for?
Right. But let's just say it's 200 grand per week, right? In terms of the cash flow, right? Compared to our properties that we're looking at and the deals that I've got, I know that you've got, the average rent is around $1,000 a week. You might have two dwellings on there, right?
Yep.
To have the same amount of units, you got five.
Yeah.
Five kitchens, five, you know, the toilets. In terms of
maintenance perspective,
why would you want to end up with five when you can end up with two for the same numbers?
Like
the maintenance issues are going to chew away your cash flow and your yield and so forth. So it doesn't make sense in the end.
Yeah, for sure. The thing is, they're not even at the same money. So you think about let's say that example there that you're talking about, and you're $1,000 of rent coming in. Let's say you got some basic holding costs like you do in the, you know, from the net example, your net holding costs you have associated with a property, insurances, council rates, you know, all that sort of stuff. That $1,000 a week rental, let's say $200 a week for a big number, comes off, and so you're left with $800 a week. That's $40,000 a year, of net income from that one property. And yes, there's two rentals on that thing, so you do have two sets of everything. Realistically, with this style of product we're talking about, you're probably looking at somewhere between, you're looking at least probably six or seven of them, if not 8 to 10 of these properties to achieve the same net income as that. Because the council rates are probably almost the same. The insurances are probably almost the same. If anything, you might have more costs because you've got strata, depending what the strata's at as well. And if you're in a pretty bad area, your insurances might be through the roof as well, if you can get it insured at all. So yeah, there's a lot of variables in this thing that just make it an extremely unattractive investment compared to, you know, even from that cash flow perspective, compared to exactly as you're saying there, one of these deals, of say something like a high cash flow deal. So I think the important thing around this, I don't want to labor too long on this thing, I think we delivered on it pretty much at the start, but I think just bringing very, very crystal clear awareness around this thing, so people understand why they shouldn't be touching these products, why they got to avoid them with a 50-foot barge pole, and really be looking at what is it you're wanting out of the portfolio. Let's put the correct properties in there to facilitate that need.
Can I give you one last curveball?
Yeah, let's go.
So mum and dad want Sammy to live close by where they live.
Yep.
Mum and dad have a house, but you can't afford a house where mum and dad live.
Mm.
So the general rule of thumb is mum and dad put the squeeze on you, buy a unit close to here. It's a great area. You grew up here. It's great. Get a unit.
Mm.
Get the first home buyer's grant. Get all the benefits from the government.
Yeah.
And you get the unit.
Yep.
And then you're stuck.
Mm.
What would you say to those people? Because every client that I speak to, their parents are always pushing them to buy a unit where they live.
I had a funny Instagram direct message exchange with a father of a fella that wanted to come on board and work with us. And the dad messaged me. Not aggressively, but he was just like, am I missing something here? Because my son is looking to come on board with you guys and we're looking to gift him the deposit to get in his first deal, but we want him to buy something locally and we want him to try and take advantage of the first homeowner grants and take advantage of everything he can to buy locally. And I said, where do you live? And I think he was in some part of Sydney or something like that.
Lane Cove.
I can't remember where it was, but it was the thing was when he kind of said it to me, I'm pretty sure it was Sydney or something like that. And I said, the biggest issue is the likelihood of your suburb and your location and doing a house and land package or a unit or something like that in that area near where you guys live and it being the highest performing property market in the next 2, 3, 5 years, the likelihood of that is however many suburbs are over 15,000 to one possibility, right? Even if you whittled it down to being like an okay area, you're still probably talking like a 1 in 10,000 chance of that actually happening. And if it's an owner-occupied area of Sydney, very, very, very slim chance of that happening. Instead, if you flipped it on its head and your son goes out there and he rent vests, maybe he rent vests near where you live, maybe in a slightly more affordable pocket so it's not, you know, killing his serviceability. But then he goes out and he invests in affordable locations that he can actually afford to hold the property. The property is going to perform, but affordable growth locations that he's then going to be able to pull equity out, afford to pull the equity out and keep building the portfolio, pull the equity out, build the portfolio, buy the next one, keep building his portfolio like that. The compounding effect and the nature of that decision and going down that road and building his portfolio like that is going to be so much more superior than taking your advice and being, you know, gun held to the head. I didn't say exactly like this, but essentially gun held to the head and going and buying something only because you're only giving him this to get into this first deal, but then being stuck on property number one and probably being stuck there for 5+ years because he went and bought in his own backyard that was not a great growth location. And that is going to cost him an arm, a leg, and get to him to his max serviceability and not be able to buy anything else. I do not see the merit in that or the logic in doing that as opposed to going out and building it somewhere else where he's going to be actually able to make some money, build an equity base and be able to keep building his portfolio so that someday he's going to be able to come back and live near you guys, but also potentially be able to buy a house there that he's going to be able to like and afford and not just get an entry level, scrape the barrel. What's the cheapest thing I can afford here that I can get some grants for? You know, and also the fact that, you know, they typically get loaded up with extra costs on top of them because they can get grants and whatnot for them. The opportunity and what is so like what he, how much further he will get along by buying that investment and investing in that way is so much better than just going buying something locally just because he can buy it, just because he can get a first home owner's grant or whatever as well. So I've had a lot of people reach out to me about that in the last couple of years, especially since Melbourne and Sydney had a massive boom, even since Brizzy had a massive boom, and like nice areas in those three cities now are worth over $1 million typically, and most first home buyers can't get in there, you know, and they say, help me, mate, what do I do? I actually had a few discovery calls with clients this week, you know, that their parents, actually this is funny to completely flip it on its head, their parents are paying the buyer's agency fee for them to work with us. They had to save their own deposit, but they're paying the buyer's agency fee to work for us because they know they cannot afford to buy in Sydney, and the kids thought all hope was lost until the parents heard the potties. Wow. They started listening to it and getting the education and then going, you know what, this is the avenue we're going to help put you guys on. We'll pay the first buyer's agency fee, you save the deposit, and then we can keep growing and building it from there as well. So, yeah, to talk about completely flipping the script from that, it's honestly, it's extremely, I think, humbling to have those chats with people and they're like, you know, this is what we want you to help our kids do and build their legacy.
What did that father end up saying, that exchange that you had? Did he realize or he
just liked the message, never wrote back.
Left him on red.
Left me on red. No, he gave me like a double tap.
He gave me a thumbs up.
He gave me a heart.
Gave him a thumbs. Mate, you can't get a thumb down.
You can't give me a thumb. I didn't get a thumb down. That was good. But I mean, I took the time to reply. So
not even an eye roll.
That's normally comes from you, you dirty dog. But I think, man, you put that into perspective from that side as well. And there's so much there when you take it away and you look at what can be done, especially for the younger guys. There's almost always better options out there that you can go and do, you know?
You know, the question, you know, flipping it on its head, if you said to the parents, do you want your child to own a house close to you? And if you say if they said yes, which clearly it is, you say, they cannot be buying a unit. That is the longest way for them to buy near you.
Yeah.
They need to go out, buy these properties, eventually consolidate, come back and buy the house.
100%.
So if they knew that game, then they would say, oh, yeah, you're right, Sammy. Which comes down to, as we always say, your circle of influence.
Yeah,
like understanding, don't take the advice from people who haven't done what you are trying to do.
100%. Man, that's what it always goes back to, man. Always goes back to. You can only be taking the advice from those people. People you can genuinely trust and the people that have got your best interests at heart and have done what you're trying to do. That's who you want to be talking to and guiding you on these journeys.
Yep.
This journey.
Mate, I think we've pretty much nailed it. Is there anything else that you want
to... I think we tried to stretch it. I think we're pretty done.
Do you want to take any other clips on the way out? Do you want to give anyone a bit of a... any nibbles, anyone else?
Throw a few names out there. Nah, we'll take it easy from there. I think most people probably know who we're talking about. But guys, I hope you took some value. If there's anyone that's out there that has been talking about this or potentially, you know, has been tossing up whether they should buy one of these or maybe they've got one of these in the portfolio, obviously I feel massively for them because they are absolute pieces of shit investments. But yeah, guys, if there's anyone that you think could take some great value from this, make sure you send it on. Try and protect anyone that might be thinking about doing this because it is a mistake in my strong personal opinion.
What if they were to prove you wrong and say, Sammy, I think you're full of shit. Write in. Let us know.
Yeah,
If you've got a reason, if you think that this is the right thing to do, send it in. Yeah. We'll unpack it.
Yeah. Send it in, 100%. If someone can prove me wrong with it, I've seen that many examples of it being ridiculously wrong and being a massive, massive mistake. But there might have been a few people out there maybe got a little COVID win, a little COVID blip where the market went up where they were out in the sticks. Maybe someone will try and prove me wrong with that. But send through the cash flows and I'll be sure to crush you on that too. So...
Chompers, we get the chompers out.
Get the chompers out. Throw a bit of blood on the bit of blood on the floor. But guys, I hope you enjoyed the ep. I know it was a bit of a shorter, sharper one. We normally do. I hope you enjoyed it. If you did, as always, please leave us a 5-star review and leave us a testimonial and send it on to anyone else you think might take great value or that you think you might need to protect from something like this product as well. I hope you enjoyed the episode. Until next week, guys. Jimmy, thanks again for jumping on. We'll see you next week.